Fenoglio waited for Roxanne in a room in the castle where petitioners were usually received. Ordinary folk who came here to tell Cosimo's administrators their troubles while a scribe recorded their words on paper, parchment being far too valuable for such purposes. Then they were sent away, hoping that their prince would put his mind to their concern sometime. But under the Laughing Prince, that had not been very often, except at Violante's persuasion, so his subjects had usually settled their quarrels among themselves, with or without violence, depending on their temperament and on their influence in the community. It was hoped that Cosimo would change all that soon.
"What am I doing here?" murmured Fenoglio, looking around the high-ceilinged, narrow room. He had still been in bed, in much more comfort than at Minerva's house, when her ugliness's messenger had appeared. "Violante sent her apologies," said the man, and since he was better with words than anyone else she knew, she asked him to talk to Roxanne on her behalf. That was how the powerful acted, offloading the less pleasant tasks in life onto other people. But on the other hand, he had always hoped to meet Dustfinger's wife some day. Was she really as beautiful as his description of her? With a sigh, he dropped into the armchair generally used by one of Cosimo's administrators. Since Cosimo's return, so many petitioners had flocked to the castle that in the future they were going to be allowed to come and put their cases on only 2 days of the week. Their prince had weightier matters on his mind just now than the troubles of a farmer whose neighbor had stolen his pig, a cobbler who had bought poor quality leather from a dealer, or a seamstress whose husband beat her every night when he came home drunk. Of course, there was a judge in every town of any size to settle such quarrels, but most of them had a poor reputation. Folk said, on both sides of the wayless wood, that you'd get your rights only if you filled the judge's pockets with gold. So those who had no gold went up to the castle to appeal to their angel-faced prince, without realizing that he had more than enough to do preparing for his war. When Roxanne entered the room, she had two children with her, a girl of about 5 and an older boy, probably Brianna's brother Jihan, the lad who had the dubious honor of playing with Jacopo now and then. She frowned as she scrutinized the tapestries on the walls celebrating the Laughing Prince's exploits in his youth. Unicorns, dragons, white stags. Clearly nothing had been safe from his royal spear.
"Why don't we just go into the garden?" suggested Fenoglio, noticing her expression of disapproval and quickly rising from the princely chair.
If anything, she was even more beautiful than his description of her. But after all, he had sought the most wonderful words for her when he wrote the scene in Inkheart where Dustfinger saw her for the first time. Yet, all at once, now that she so suddenly stood before him in the flesh, he felt as lovelorn as a silly boy.
"Oh, for goodness sake, Fenoglio," he reproached himself. "You made her up, and now you're staring at her as if this was the first time in your life you'd ever seen a woman."
Worst of all, Roxanne seemed to notice it.
"Yes, let's go into the garden. I've heard a great deal about it, but I've never seen it," she said with a smile that cast Fenoglio into total confusion. "But first, please, tell me why you want to speak to me. Your letter said only that it was about Brianna."
Why he wanted to speak to her? He cursed Violante's jealousy, Cosimo's faithless heart, and himself too.
Let's go into the garden first," he said.
Perhaps it would be easier to tell her what her ugliness had instructed him to say in the open air. But of course it was not. The boy set off in search of Jacopo as soon as they were outside, but the girl stayed with Roxanne, clinging to her hand as she went from plant to plant, and Fenoglio found he couldn't utter a word.
"I know why I was summoned,"
said Roxanne, just as he was trying for the 10th time to find the right words.
"Brianna didn't tell me herself. She'd never do that. But the maid who takes Cosimo's breakfast every morning often comes to me for advice about her sick mother, and she's told me that Brianna seldom leaves his room, not even at night."
Yes. Yes, that's it. Violante is concerned, and she hopes that you, oh, damn it, how his voice was faltering. He didn't know how to go on.
this wretched confusion. His story clearly had too many characters in it. How was he to foresee everything they'd think of? It was downright impossible, particularly when a young girl's heart was involved. No one could expect him to understand anything about that.
Roxanne scrutinized his face as if she were still waiting for the end of his sentence.
You stupid old fool. Surely you're not going to blush, Fenoglio thought, and felt the blood shoot into his wrinkled face as if to drive the age out of it.
The boy has told me about you, said Roxanne. Farid, he's in love with the girl who's staying with you. Maggie, isn't that right? When he speaks her name, he looks as if he had a pearl in his mouth.
Yes, I'm beginning to think that Maggie likes him too.
What exactly, wondered Fenoglio uneasily, has the boy been saying about me? Telling her I made her up and the man she loves too? Only to kill him off again?
The little girl was still clutching Roxanne's hand. With a smile, she put a flower in the child's long dark hair.
You know something, Fenoglio? He thought. All this is nonsense. What makes you think you invented her? She must always have been here, long before you wrote your story. A woman like her can't possibly be made of nothing but words. You've been wrong all this time. They were here already, all of them. Dustfinger and Capricorn, Basta and Roxanne, Minerva, Violante, the Adhead. You merely wrote their story, but they didn't like it. And now, they're writing it for themselves.
The little girl felt the flower with her fingers and smiled.
Is she Dustfinger's daughter?
Asked Fenoglio.
Roxanne looked at him in surprise.
No, she said. Her second daughter died long ago. But how do you come to know Dustfinger?
He's never mentioned you to me.
You fool. Fenoglio, you stupid fool.
Oh, yes, I... I certainly know Dustfinger, he stammered. In fact, I know him very well. I often visit the strolling players, you see, when they pitch their tents here outside the city wall. That's where I met him.
Really? Roxanne ran her fingers over a plant with feathery leaves. I didn't know he'd been back there already. Her face thoughtful, she moved on to another flower bed. Wild mallow. I grow it in my own fields. Isn't it beautiful? So useful, too.
She did not look at Fenoglio as she went on.
Dustfinger is gone, yet again. All I had was a message to say he's following men of the Adderhead's troops who have kidnapped some of the strolling players. Her mother, she added, putting her arm around the girl, is one of them. And the Black Prince, a good friend of his.
They'd captured the prince, too? Fenoglio tried to hide his alarm. Obviously, matters were even worse than he'd thought. And what he was writing down on parchment was still no use. Roxanne felt the seed heads of a lavender bush. Their sweet scent immediately filled the air.
I'm told that you were there when Cloud Dancer was killed. Did you know his murderer? I heard that it was Basta, one of the fire raisers from the forest.
I'm afraid what you heard was right.
Not a night passed when Fenoglio did not see Basta's knife flying through the air. It pursued him into all his dreams.
The boy told Dustfinger that Basta was back, but I hoped he wasn't telling the truth. I'm anxious.
She spoke so softly that Fenoglio could hardly make out her words.
So anxious that I keep finding myself just standing and staring at the forest, as if he might appear among the trees again at any moment, the way he did on the morning he came back.
She picked a dried lavender head and shook some of the tiny seeds into her hand.
May I take these with me?
You can take anything you want, replied Fenoglio. Seeds, runners, cuttings. So Violante told me to tell you anything.
If you'll persuade your daughter to keep Violante herself company in the future, and not a husband.
Roxanne looked at the seeds in her hand and then let a few of them fall lightly on the flower bed.
It won't work. My daughter hasn't listened to me for years. She loves the life up here, although she knows that I don't, and she's loved Cosimo ever since she first saw him ride out at the castle gate on his wedding day. She was barely 7 then, and after that her heart was set on coming here to the castle, even if it meant working as a maid. If Yolante hadn't once heard her singing down in the kitchen, she'd probably still be emptying chamber pots, feeding kitchen scraps to the pigs, and sometimes stealing upstairs in secret to feast her eyes on the statues of Cosimo. Instead, she became like Violante's little sister, wore her clothes, looked after her son, sang and danced for her like one of the strolling players, like her own mother, not with motley skirts and dirty feet, not sleeping by the roadside and carrying a knife to defend herself against vagrants trying to creep in under her blanket at night, but in silken clothes and with a soft bed to sleep in. She wears her hair loose all the same, just as I did, and she loves too much, exactly as I did.
No, she said, placing the seeds in Finolio's hand. Tell Violante that much as I would like to help her, I can't. The little girl looked at Finolio. Where was her mother now?
Listen, he told Roxanne. Her beauty took his breath away. Take as many seeds as you like. They'll grow and thrive in your fields much better than within these gray walls. Dustfinger has gone off with Maggie. I sent her a messenger. As soon as the man is back, you'll hear everything he has to tell. Where they are now, how long they'll stay away, everything.
Roxanne took the lavender from him again, picked a handful more, and carefully put them in the bag hanging from her belt.
Thank you, she said. But if I don't hear from Dustfinger soon, I shall set off in search of him myself. I stayed here too often just waiting for him to come back safe and sound, and I can't get it out of my mind that Basta is back.
But how will you find him? The last news I heard from Maggie was that they were making for a mill known as the Spelt Mill. It's on the far side of the forest in Argenta. That's dangerous country.
Roxanne smiled at him, like a woman explaining the way of the world to her child.
It will soon be dangerous here, too, she said. Do you think that the other head won't have heard by now that Cosimo is having swords forged day and night? Perhaps you should look around for some other place to do your writing, before the fiery arrows come raining down on your desk.
Roxanne's mount was waiting in the outer courtyard of the castle. It was an old black horse, thin and going gray around the muzzle.
I know the Spelt Mill,
she said, lifting the little girl up onto the horse's back.
I'll ride past it, and if I don't find him there, I'll try the barn owl's place. He's the best physician I know on either side of the forest, and he looked after Dustfinger as a boy. Perhaps he may have heard news of him.
Of course, the barn owl. How could Finolia have forgotten him? If Dustfinger ever had anything like a father, it was this man. He had been one of the physicians who went around with the strolling players from place to place, from market to market. Unfortunately, Finolio didn't know much more about him. Damn it all, he thought. How can you forget your own stories, and don't try making your age an excuse?
If you see Jehan, send him home,
said Roxanne as she swung herself up behind the girl on the horse.
He knows the way.
Are you planning to ride through the Wayless Wood on that old nag?
This old nag will carry me as far as I want, she said.
The girl leaned back against Roxanne's breast as she gathered up the reins.
Goodbye, she said.
But Finolio held the horse back by the bridle. An idea had come to him, an idea born of desperation, but what else could he do? Wait for the mounted messenger he had sent until it was too late?
Roxanne, he said, low-voiced, as he looked up at her. I have to get a letter to Maggie. I've sent a horseman after her to tell me where she is and whether she's well, but he isn't back yet, and by the time I send him off again with the letter...
Don't tell her anything about Basta and Slasher, Finolio. It would only upset her unnecessarily.
Well, what I'm getting at is... Oh, for heaven's sake, Finolio, don't stare at her like that, stammering like an old dotted... What I mean is, if you really do ride after Dustfinger, would you take my letter to Maggie with you? You'd probably find her sooner than any messenger I could send now. What kind of letter?
An inner voice mocked him.
A letter telling her that nothing has occurred to you.
But as usual, he ignored the voice.
It's a very
important letter.
If he could have spoken even more softly, he would have done so. Roxanne wrinkled her brow.
Even that was a beautiful sight.
The last time you had anything to do with a letter, it cost Cloud Dancer his life. Still, very well. Bring it to me if you like. As I said, I'm not going to wait much longer.
The castle courtyard seemed strangely empty to Finolio when she had gone. Rosencourts was waiting in his room beside the parchment, which was still blank, looking reproachful.
You know something, Rosencourts?
Finolio said to the glass man, sitting down on his chair again with a sigh.
I think Dustfinger would like to wring my old neck if he knew how I gazed at his wife. But what does that matter? He liked to wring my neck anyway. One reason more or less makes no difference. He doesn't deserve Roxanne anyway, leaving her alone so often.
Ooh, someone's in a truly princely temper again, remarked Rosencourts.
I'll be quiet, growled Finolio. This parchment is about to be covered with words, and I just hope you've stirred the ink properly. The ink's not to blame if the parchment is still blank, retorted the glass man.
Finolio didn't throw the pen at him, although his fingers itched to do so. The words that had passed Rosencourt's pale lips were only the truth. How could the glass man help it if the truth was unpleasant? Chapter 48 The Castle by the Sea. It was exactly as Mo had imagined the Castle of Night. Mighty towers, round and heavily built, crenulations like black teeth below the silver rooftops. Mo thought he was seeing Finolio's words before his eyes when the exhausted captive staggered through the castle gateway ahead of him. Black words on paper white as milk.
The Castle of Night, a dark growth by the sea. Every stone of it polished with screams, its walls slippery with tears and blood.
Yes, Finolio was a good storyteller. Silver rimmed the battlements and gateways, and wound over the walls like snail trails. The Adderhead loved that metal. His subjects called it Moonspit. Perhaps because an alchemist had once spun him a tale that it could keep away the white women, who hated it because it reflected their pale faces. Or so Finolio had written, anyway. Of all the places in the Ink World, this was the last where Mo would have chosen to be. But he wasn't choosing his own way through the story, that much was certain. It had given him a new name, the Blue Jay. Sometimes he felt as if the name were really his, as if he had been carrying it around in him like a seed that had only now begun to grow in this world of words. He was feeling better. The fever was still there, like opaque glass in front of his eyes, but the pain was a tame kitten by comparison with the beast of prey that had still been tearing at him in the cave. He could sit up if he gritted his teeth. He could look around to find Risa. He seldom took his eyes off her, as if, in that way, he could protect her from the glances of the soldiers, their kicks and blows. The sight of her hurt more than his wound. By the time the gates of the Castle of Night closed behind her and the other prisoners, she could barely keep on her feet for exhaustion. She stood still and looked up at the walls surrounding her, like a mouse examining the trap it has fallen into. One of the soldiers pushed her on with the shaft of his spear, and Mo longed to put his hands around the man's neck and press hard. He tasted the hatred on his tongue and in his heart like a shivering sensation, and cursed his own weakness. Risa looked at him and tried to smile, but she was too exhausted, and he saw her fear. The soldiers reined in their horses and surrounded the prisoners as if they could possibly have escaped from those steeply towering walls. The viper's head supporting the roofs and ledges left no one in any doubt who the lord of this castle was. They looked down on the forlorn little troop from everywhere, with forked tongues in their narrow mouths, eyes of red gemstone, silver scales shimmering like fish skin in the moonlight.
"Put the Blue Jay in the tower!"
Firefox's voice was almost lost in the huge expanse of the castle courtyard.
"And take the others to the dungeons!"
So, they were going to be separated. Mo saw Risa moving painfully on her sore feet, turned to Firefox. One of the mounted men kicked her back so roughly with his boot that she fell to the ground, and Mo felt a dragging sensation in his breast, as if his hatred had given birth to something, something that wanted to kill. A new heart, cold and hard. A weapon. If only he had a weapon, one of the ugly swords they all wore at their belts, or one of those sharp, shiny knives. There seemed to be nothing more desirable in the world than such a sharp piece of metal. More desirable than all the words Finolio could write. They hauled him off the cart. He could hardly keep his footing, but somehow or other he stood upright. Four soldiers surrounded him and seized him, and he imagined himself killing them, one by one, while that new, cold heart in his breast beat time.
"Hey! Go a bit more carefully with him, will you?"
Firefox snapped at them.
"You think I brought him this whole damn way just for you fools to kill him now?"
Risa was crying. Mo heard her call his name again and again. He turned, but he couldn't see her anywhere. He only heard her voice. He called her name, tried to break free, kicked out at the soldiers who were dragging him away toward one of the towers.
"You just try that again," snarled one of them. "What's biting you, then? You two will soon be reunited. The Adderhead likes wives to watch an execution."
"That's right. He can't get enough of their weeping and wailing," mocked another man. "You'll see. He'll keep her alive a little longer just for that. And you'll get a magnificent execution, Blue Jay. You mark my words."
Blue Jay. A new name. A new heart. Like ice in his breast, with edges as sharp as a blade. Chapter 49. The Mill. It took Dustfinger over 3 days to reach the Spelt Mill with Meggie and Farid. 3 long gray days during which Meggie hardly spoke a word, although Farid did his best to cheer her up. Most of the time it was raining, a fine drizzle, and soon none of them could remember what it felt like to sleep in dry clothes. Only when, at last, the dark valley where the mill stood opened out before them, did the sun break through the clouds. Low in the sky above the hills, it shed golden light on the river and shingle roofs. There wasn't another dwelling to be seen far and wide, only the miller's house, a few outhouses, and the mill itself, with its great wooden wheel dipping deep into the water. Willows, poplars, and eucalyptus bushes lined the bank of the river on which it stood, together with alders and wild pear trees. There was a cart standing at the foot of the steps leading into the mill. A broad-shouldered man, dusted with flour, was just loading it up with sacks. There was no one else in sight except a boy who, on seeing them approach, ran over to the house. All looked peaceful, peaceful and quiet, apart from the rushing of the water, which drowned out even the chirping of the cicadas.
"You'll see," Farid whispered to Maggie. "Finolio's written something, I'm sure he has. Or if not, we'll just wait until—"
"We'll do no such thing," Dustfinger brusquely interrupted him, looking distrustfully around. "We'll ask about the letter, and then we'll go on. Many people come to this mill, and after what happened on the road, the first of the soldiers will soon be putting in an appearance. If it was up to me, we wouldn't show our faces here until everything had calmed down a bit, but if you must—"
"Suppose the letter hasn't come yet?"
Maggie looked at him with anxiety in her face.
"When I wrote to Finolio, I told him I would wait for it here."
"Yes, and I don't remember saying that you could write to him at all, did I?"
Maggie made no answer, and Dustfinger glanced at the mill again.
"I just hope Cloud Dancer delivered the letter safely and the old man hasn't been showing it around. I don't have to tell you what damage the words on the page can do."
He looked around for the last time before moving out of the cover of the trees. Then he signaled to Farid and Maggie to follow him and strode toward the buildings. The boy who had run to the house was sitting on the steps outside the door of the mill again, and a few chickens ran away, squawking, as Gwyn shot toward them.
"Farid, catch that damn marten,"
ordered Dustfinger as he whistled Jink to his side. But Gwyn hissed at Farid. He didn't bite him, he never bit Farid, but he wasn't letting himself be caught either. He slipped through Farid's legs and bounded after one of the chickens. Cackling, it fluttered up the steps of the mill, but the marten wasn't to be shaken off that way. He shot past the boy, who was still sitting on the steps, apparently taking no interest in anything, and disappeared through the open door in pursuit of the chicken.
A moment later, the cackling stopped abruptly, and Maggie glanced anxiously at Dustfinger.
Oh, wonderful,
he murmured, making Jink jump back into his backpack.
A martin in the flower and a dead chicken. That's going to make us very popular here.
Speak of the devil. The man loading up the cart wiped his floury hands on his trousers and came toward them.
Excuse me, please, Dustfinger called to him. Where's the miller? I'll pay for the chicken, of course. We're really here to collect something. A letter.
The man stopped in front of them. He was a full head taller than Dustfinger.
I'm the miller now, he said. My father's dead. A letter, you say?
He inspected them one by one. His eyes lingered the longest on Dustfinger's face.
Yes, a letter from Umbra, replied Dustfinger, glancing up at the mill.
Why isn't it grinding? Don't the farmers bring you their grain anymore? Or have you run out of miller's men?
The miller shrugged.
Someone brought us damp spelt to grind yesterday. The bran gummed up the millstones. My men spent hours cleaning them. What kind of letter is it? And who is it to? Don't you have a name?
Dustfinger looked at him thoughtfully.
So there is a letter here. It's for me, said Maggie, stepping forward beside him. Maggie Folkart, that's my name.
The miller inspected her at length, her dirty dress, her matted hair, and then he nodded.
Yes, I have it inside, he said. I'm only asking because a letter can be dangerous in the wrong hands, can't it? Go on in, I'll just load up this last sack.
Fill the water bottles, Dustfinger whispered to Farid, slinging his backpack over the boy's shoulders. I'll catch that damn Martin, pay for the chicken, and as soon as Maggie has the letter, we'll be out of here. Before Farid could protest, he had disappeared into the mill with Maggie. The boy passed his arm over his dirty face and watched them go.
Fill the water bottles, muttered Farid as he climbed down the bank to the river.
Catch the Martin. Does he think I'm his servant?
The mill boy was still sitting on the steps as Farid stood in the cold river, holding their gourds underwater.
There's something about that boy that he didn't like. Something in his face.
Fear.
Yes, that was it.
He was afraid.
What of?
It's hardly likely to be me, thought Farid, looking around.
Something was wrong. He could smell it.
He'd always been able to smell it. Even back in his other life when he had to stand guard, spy out the land, follow people unseen, go scouting ahead. Oh yes, he knew what danger smelled like. He put the water bottles in the backpack with Jink and scratched the sleepy Martin's head. He didn't see the body until he was about to wade back to the bank. The dead man was still young, and Farid had a feeling that he'd seen his face before. Hadn't the man thrown a copper coin into his bowl in Umbra during the celebrations at the castle? The body was caught in the branches, bending low above the water, but the wound in its chest was clearly visible. A knife. Farid's heart began to race so suddenly that he could hardly breathe. He looked at the mill. The boy sitting outside it was clutching his own shoulders as if he feared he might fall apart with terror, but the miller had disappeared. No sound could be heard from the mill, but that meant nothing. The rushing water could have drowned out everything. Screams, the clash of swords.
Come on, Farid, he told himself sharply. Slink up there and find out what's going on. You've done it 100 times, now even more often.
Ducking low, he waded through the river and climbed up onto the bank behind the mill wheel. His heart was in his mouth as he leaned against the wall of the mill, but that was nothing new either. 1,000 times or more he had slunk up to a building, a window, a closed door, with his heart beating hard. He leaned against Dustfinger's backpack with the sleeping Martin in it against the wall. Gwyn. Gwyn had run inside the mill, and Dustfinger had gone after him. That wasn't good. Not good at all. Maggie was with him, too. Farid looked up at the mill. The nearest window was a good way above his head, but luckily the wall was rough-textured.
Keep silent as a snake, he whispered to himself as he hauled himself up.
The windowsill was white with flower dust.
Holding his breath, Farid peered in.
The first thing he saw was a pudgy fellow
with a foolish face, probably the miller's man. Farida had never seen the other man beside him before, but unfortunately he couldn't say the same of his companion. Basta. The same thin face, the same vicious smile. Only the clothes were different. Basta was no longer wearing his white shirt and black suit with the flower in his buttonhole. No, Basta now wore the adder head silvery gray, and he had a sword at his side. With a knife in his belt, too, of course. But he was holding a dead chicken in his left hand. Only the millstone stood between him and Dustfinger. The millstone and Gwyn, who was crouching in the middle of the round stone, staring longingly at the chicken as the tip of his tail twitched restlessly up and down. Meggie was standing close to Dustfinger. Was she thinking the same as Farid? Did she remember Finolio's deadly words? Perhaps, for she was trying to entice Gwyn over to her, but the marten took no notice.
"What am I to do?" Farid wondered. "What on earth am I to do? Climb in?"
Nonsense! What use would that be? His silly little knife couldn't prevail against two swords, and then there'd be the miller and his man to deal with, too. The miller was standing right beside the door.
"Well, are these the folk you were waiting for?" he asked Basta.
How pleased with himself and his lies he looked. Farid would have loved to use his knife to peel that sly smile off his lips.
"Yes, they are," purred Basta. "The little witch and the fire-eater in the bargain. It was well worth the wait, even though I'll probably never get that damn flower out of my lungs again."
"Think, Farid. Go on, go on."
He looked around, let his eyes wander, as if they could find him a way of escape through the solid masonry. There was another window, but the miller's man was standing in front of it, and a wooden staircase led to the loft where they probably stored the grain. They would tip it through the wooden hopper sticking up through the floor of the loft, and then it would fall on the millstone. The hopper? Yes. It rose through the ceiling of the mill like a wooden mouth right above the stone. Suppose he... Farid looked up at the mill. Was there another window higher up? Yes, there was. Hardly more than a hole in the wall, but he had crawled through narrower openings before. His heart was still in his mouth as he hauled himself farther up the wall. The river flowed fast to his left, and a crow stared at him from a willow as suspiciously as if it were about to give him away to the miller at any moment. Farid was breathing heavily as he forced his shoulders through the narrow aperture in the wall. As he set foot on the wooden floorboards of the loft, they creaked treacherously, but the river drowned out that telltale sound. On his stomach, Farid inched over to the hopper and peered down through it. Right below him stood Basta, and Dustfinger must be standing opposite him on the other side of the stone with Meggie. Farid couldn't see him, but he could imagine only too well what Dustfinger was thinking of. Finolio's words telling the tale of his death.
"Grab that marten slasher,"
Basta told the man beside him.
"Go on, do it."
"Do it yourself. You think I want to catch rabies?"
"Come here, Gwyn."
That was Dustfinger's voice.
What was he doing?
Trying to laugh his own fear in the face, the way he sometimes did when the fire bit his skin? Gwyn leaped off the stone. He would be sitting on Dustfinger's shoulder staring at Basta.
Stupid Gwyn. He didn't know about the words.
"Find your clothes, Basta," said Dustfinger. "When the servant finds a new master, he must wear new clothes, mustn't he?"
"Servant? Who's a servant here? Just listen to him. As bold as if he'd never felt my knife. Have you forgotten how you screamed when it cut your face?"
Basta set one boot on the millstone.
"Don't you dare move so much as a finger. Hands up. Go on, up in the air. I know what you can do with fire in this world. One little whisper from you, one snap of your fingers, and my knife goes into the little witch's breast."
A snap of the fingers.
"Yes, get on with it, Farid."
He looked around, searching for what he needed, quickly twisted some straw together to make a torch, and then began whispering.
"Come along, come along, come along, come along."
He lured the fire, clicking his tongue and hissing the way Dustfinger had shown him after he had put a little fire honey in his mouth for the first time. They had practiced every evening behind Roxanne's house, practiced the language of fire, its crackling words. Fareed whispered them all until a tiny flame came licking up out of the straw.
Oh, dear! Look how the little witch is staring at me, Slasher!
Asked Basta below him with pretended horror.
What pity she needs written words for her witchcraft, but there's no book anywhere here. Wasn't it nice of her to write to us in person and tell us where to find you?
Basta disguised his voice to make it sound shrill and girlish.
Yeah, the headsmen have taken them all away. My parents and the strolling players. Write something for me, Fenolio.
Something like that. You know, I was really disappointed to hear that your father's still alive.
Oh, don't look so disbelieving, little witch. I still can't read and I don't intend to learn.
But there are enough fools around this place who can, even in this world.
A scribe ran into our arms right outside the city gates of Umbra. It took a little while for him to decipher your scribble, but we still had a good enough start to get here ahead of you. We were even on the spot in time to kill the old man's messenger who was supposed to warn you.
You're even more talkative than you used to be, Basta. Dustfinger's voice sounded as if he found this tedious. How well he could hide his fear. Fareed always admired him for that, almost more than for his skill with fire. Slowly, very slowly, Basta drew his knife from his belt. Dustfinger didn't like knives. He generally kept his in his backpack, and his backpack was leaning against the wall outside. Fareed had so often begged him to keep his knife in his belt, but no, he wouldn't hear of it.
Talkative, well, well.
Basta looked at his reflection in the bright blade of the knife.
No one could say the same of you, but I tell you what. We've known each other so long, I'll carry the news of your death to your wife in person. What do you say to that, fire-eater? Do you think Roxanne will be glad to see me again?
Caressingly, he ran two fingers along the blade.
And as for you, little witch, I thought it was really nice of you to entrust your letter to an old tightrope walker. With his stiff leg, he wasn't half as fast as my knife.
Cloud Dancer? You killed Cloud Dancer?
There was no boredom in Dustfinger's voice now.
Stand still, please, whispered Fareed. Please, please stand still.
He was hastily feeding more straw to the flames.
Ah, so you didn't know that yet.
Basta's voice became soft with contentment.
Yes, there'll be no more dancing for your old friend, asked Slasher. He was there.
You're lying!
Maggie's voice shook. Fareed bent cautiously forward. He saw Dustfinger push her roughly behind him, his eyes searching for a way out, but there was none. Sacks full of flour were stacked behind him and Maggie. Slasher was barring their way to their right. On their left was the man with the silly grin, and in front of the window through which Fareed had peered stood the miller. But there was straw lying on the floor at their feet. A great deal of straw, and it would burn almost as well as paper. Basta laughed. With one bound, he leaped up on the millstone and looked down at Dustfinger. He was standing very close to the outlet of the hopper now.
Hurry up, come on,
whispered Fareed, kindling a second bundle of straw from the first and holding them both above the funnel. He hoped the wood wouldn't catch fire. He hoped the straw would slide through. He hoped so. His fingers were scorched as he stuffed the burning bundles in, but he took no notice. Dustfinger was in a trap, and Maggie was in it with him. What did a couple of burned fingers matter?
Yes, poor Cloud Dancer was far too slow,
purred Basta as he tossed his knife from one hand to the other.
You're faster than him, I know, Fire Eater, but you won't get away all the same. And this time, I'm not just going to cut your face. This time, I'll slice your skin off in strips from head to foot.
Now!
Fareed let the burning straw drop. The hopper swallowed it like a sack of corn and spat it out on Basta's boots.
Fire! Where's that fire coming from?
It was the miller's voice. His man was bellowing like an ox when it sees the butcher's hatchet. Farid's fingers hurt. His skin was beginning to blister, but the fire was dancing up Basta's boots, licking close to his arms. Terrified, he stumbled, fell backward off the millstone, and cracked open his head against the edge of it. Blood flowed. Basta feared fire, feared it more than the bad luck against which his amulets were supposed to protect him. As for Farid, he raced down the steps to the floor of the mill, pushed aside the miller's man who was staring at him as if he were a ghost, ran to Maggie, and pulled her away with him toward the window through which he had first looked.
"Jump!" he called to her. "Quick, jump out!"
Maggie was trembling. Her hair was full of flour, and she closed her eyes before she jumped, but jump she did. Farid looked around at Dustfinger. He was talking to the flames, making them sing and grow, while the miller and his man beat desperately at the burning straw with empty sacks, but the fire danced on. He was dancing for Dustfinger. Farid crouched in the open window.
"Come on!"
he called to Dustfinger.
"Hurry up!"
Where was Basta? Dustfinger pushed the miller aside and ran to him through the smoke and flames. Farid swung himself out of the window and clung to the sill outside as he watched the dazed Basta hauling himself up by the millstone. His hand was bloody when he put it to the back of his head.
"Get him!"
he shouted to Slasher.
"Hold the fire eater fast!"
"Quick!"
cried Farid as his toes tried to find a foothold on the outside of the wall, but Dustfinger stumbled over an empty sack as he ran. Gwyn jumped off his shoulder and scurried toward Farid. When Dustfinger got to his feet again, Slasher was standing between him and the window, coughing, his sword in his hand.
"Come on!"
Farid heard Maggie shouting. She was standing right under the window, her eyes wide with fear staring up at him, but Farid wriggled his way back into the burning mill.
"What are you doing? Get out!"
Dustfinger shouted at him as he struck out with a burning sack at Slasher, whose trousers had caught fire. Slasher swayed as he lashed out with his sword, first at the flames, then at Dustfinger. His sharp blade slit open Dustfinger's leg just as Farid jumped down into the burning straw again. Dustfinger stumbled back against the wall, pressing his hand to his thigh, while Slasher raised his sword again, half mad with rage and pain.
"No!"
Farid's own voice rang in his ears as he jumped at the man. He bit his shoulder and kicked him until he dropped the sword that he had been pointing at Dustfinger's chest. Then Farid pushed Slasher into the flames. The man was more than a head taller than Farid himself, but desperation lent him strength. Farid was about to attack Basta too as he emerged from the smoke coughing, but Dustfinger pulled him back as he hissed at the flames until they made for Basta like angry vipers. Farid heard Basta scream, but he did not turn to look. He just stumbled toward the window with Dustfinger beside him, cursing as he pressed his fingers to his bleeding leg. But he was alive. He was really alive, while the fire was devouring Basta.
Chapter 50. The Best of All Nights. Later, none of them knew how they had gotten away from the mill. All Farid could remember were images. Of Maggie's face as she stumbled down to the river. Of the blood in the water when Dustfinger jumped in. Of the smoke they could still see rising into the sky after they had been wading through the cold water for more than an hour. But no one came after them. Not Slasher, or the miller, or his man. And not Basta either. Only Gwyn appeared on the bank at some point. Stupid Gwyn. It was the middle of the night when Dustfinger clambered out of the water, his face pale with exhaustion. As he let himself drop onto the grass, Farid anxiously listened into the darkness. But all he heard was the loud and steady roar, like the breathing of a gigantic animal.
"What's that?"
he whispered. "The sea. Don't you know what the sea sounds like?" "The sea." Gwyn jumped onto Farid's back as he was looking at Dustfinger's leg, but he shooed the marten away.
"Get out," he snapped. "Go hunting.
You've done enough harm for one day."
Then he let Jink out of the backpack, too, and looked for something to bind up the wound. Maggie wrung out her wet dress and crouched beside them.
"Is it bad?"
"No, I'm fine," said Dustfinger. But he winced as Farid cleaned the deep gash.
"Poor Cloud Dancer," he murmured. "He escaped death once, and now the Grim Reapers come for him after all. Who knows? Perhaps the white women don't like people to slip through their fingers like that."
"I'm sorry." Maggie spoke so quietly that Farid could hardly hear her. "I'm so very sorry. It's all my fault, and he died for nothing. Because where's Finolio going to find us now, even if he's written something for me?"
"Finolio?"
Dustfinger spoke as if it were the name of some disease.
Did you feel them too?
Maggie looked at him.
I thought I could feel his words on my skin. I thought, they're going to kill Dustfinger, but there's nothing we can do about it.
But there was, said Vari defiantly. Dustfinger, however, leaned back and looked up at the stars.
Really? We'll see. Perhaps the old man's thought up some different fate for me by now. Perhaps death is waiting just around another corner.
Let it wait, was all Farid would say, fishing a bag out of Dustfinger's backpack.
A little fairy dust can never hurt,
he murmured as he trickled the glittering powder into the wound. Then he pulled his shirt over his head, cut off a strip with his knife, and tied it carefully around Dustfinger's leg. It wasn't easy with his burned fingers, but he did his best, although the pain twisted his face. Dustfinger reached for his hand and looked at it, frowning. Heavens, your fingers are covered with as many blisters as if the fire elves have been dancing on them, he commented. Guess we both need a physician. What a pity Roxanne isn't here. Sighing, Dustfinger lay down on his back again and looked up at the dark sky.
You know what, Farid, he said as if talking to the stars. There's one really strange thing about all this. If Maggie's father hadn't plucked me out of my own story, I don't suppose I'd have ever found such a fabulous watchdog as you.
He winked at Maggie.
Did you see him biting? I'll bet Slasher thought it was the Black Prince's bear gnawing at his shoulder.
Oh, stop it. Farid didn't know where to look. Embarrassed, he picked a blade of grass with his bare toes.
Yes, but Farid is cleverer than a bear, said Maggie. Much cleverer.
Indeed.
Cleverer than me, too,
Dustfinger pointed out.
And as for what he can do with fire, I'm beginning to get seriously worried.
Farid couldn't help it. He had to grin. He felt so proud that the blood shot all the way to his ears. But in the dark, no one, luckily, would see him blushing. Dustfinger felt his leg and cautiously rose to his feet. The first step he took made his face contort with pain. But then he limped up and down the riverbank a few times.
Ugh. Here we are, he said. A little slower than usual, but it will do. It must.
Then he stopped in front of Farid.
I believe I owe you a debt, he said. How am I to repay you? Perhaps I could show you something new. A game with fire that only I can play. How about that?
Farid held his breath.
What kind of game is it? He asked. I can't show you, except by the sea, replied Dustfinger.
But we must go there anyway, because we both need a physician, and the best physician I know lives by the sea, in the shadow of the Castle of Night.
They decided to take turns keeping watch. Farid said he would take the first watch, and while Maggie and Dustfinger slept behind him, under the branches of a durmest oak that dipped low to the ground, he sat in the grass and looked up at the sky, where more stars shone than there were fireflies hovering above the river. Farid tried to remember a night, any night, when he felt as he did now, so entirely at ease with himself. But he couldn't. This was the best of all nights for him, in spite of all the terrors that lay behind him, in spite of his burned fingers, which still hurt although Dustfinger had put fairy dust on them and the cooling ointment that Roxanne had made for him.
He felt so much alive, alive as the fire. He had saved Dustfinger. He had been stronger than the words. Everything was all right.
The two Martins were squabbling behind him, no doubt over prey of some kind.
Wake me when the moon is above that hill,
Dustfinger had said. But when Farid went to him, he was sleeping deeply, with such peace in his face that Farid decided to let him sleep on and return to his place under the stars. Soon afterward, when he heard steps behind him, it was not Dustfinger, but Maggie he saw there.
I keep waking up, she said. I just can't stop thinking. Wondering if Finolio is going to find you now.
She nodded.
She still believed in words so much. Farid believed in other things.
In his knife, in courage and cunning, and in friendship. Maggie leaned her head against his shoulder, and they both remained as silent as the stars above them. After a while, a wind rose, cold and gusty, salty as seawater, and Maggie sat up and clasped her arms around her knees, shivering.
This world, she said. Do you really like it?
What a question. Fareed never asked himself such things. He was glad to be with Dustfinger again and didn't mind where that was.
It's a cruel world, don't you think?
Meggie went on.
Mo often told me I forget how cruel it is too easily.
With his burned fingers, Fareed stroked her fair hair. It shone even in the dark.
They're all cruel, he said. The world I come from, the world you come from, and this one too. Maybe people don't see the cruelty in your world right away. It's better hidden, but it's there all the same.
He put his arm around her, sensed her fear, her anxiety, her anger. It was as if he could hear her heart whispering as clearly as the voice of fire.
You know a funny thing?
She asked.
Even if I could go back at this moment, I wouldn't. Now that's crazy, isn't it? It's almost as if I'd always wanted to come here, to somewhere like this.
But why? It's a terrible place.
Terrible and beautiful, said Fareed, and kissed her.
Kissing her tasted good, much better than Dustfinger's fire honey, much better than anything he had ever tasted before.
You can't go back anyway, he whispered to her. As soon as we have your father free, we'll explain that to him.
Explain what?
Why, that we're afraid he'll have to leave you here because you belong with me now and I'm staying with Dustfinger.
She laughed and pressed her face to his shoulder in embarrassment.
I'm sure Mo won't agree to that.
Well, so tell him the girls here marry when they're your age.
She laughed again, but then her face grew grave.
Perhaps Mo will stay too, she said softly. Perhaps we'll all stay. Risa and Fenolio too. And we'll go fetch Eleanor and Darius as well, and then we'll all live happily ever after.
The sad note had crept back into her voice.
They can't hang Mo Fareed, she whispered. We'll save him, won't we? And my mother and the others? It's always like that in stories. Bad things happen, but then it all ends happily, and this is a story.
Of course, said Fareed.
Although with the best will in the world, he couldn't imagine that happy ending. He felt good, though, all the same.
After a while, Meggie dropped off to sleep beside him, and he sat there and kept watch over her, her and Dustfinger, all night long. It was the best of all nights. Chapter 51 The Right Words. The groom was a fool and took forever to saddle up the wretched horse.
I never intended a character like that, thought Fenolio, looking at him in a good mood.
For he was indeed in the best of moods. He had been whistling quietly to himself for hours because he had done it. He had found the solution. Yes, at last the words had flowed onto the parchment as if they'd just been waiting for him to fish them out of the sea of letters. The right words. The only right words. Now the story could go on, and all would end well. He was an enchanter, after all, a conjurer with words, one of the very first quality. No one could hold a candle to him. Well, one or two, maybe, but in his own world, not in this one. If only this dolt of a groom would hurry up! It was high time he went to Roxanne's house, or she would ride away without the letter. And then how was he going to get it to Meggie? For there was still no sign of life from the young hothead he had sent after her. That callow youth had probably gotten lost in the wayless wood. He felt for the letter under his cloak. Good thing that words weighed light. Light as a feather, even the most important of them. Roxanne wouldn't have a heavy load to carry when she took Meggie the Adderhead's death warrant. And she would take something else to the Principality by the Sea with her. The certainty of Cosimo's victory. Just so long as Cosimo didn't set out before Meggie even had the chance to read his words. Cosimo was burning with impatience, longing for the day when he would lead his soldiers to the other side of the forest.
Because he wants to find out who he is,
whispered the quiet voice in Fenolio's head.
Or was it in his heart?
Because your fine avenging angel is empty, like a box with nothing inside it. A few borrowed memories, a few stone statues. That's all the poor lad has, in your stories of his heroic deeds. He searches his empty heart in desperation for some echo of them. You ought to have tried to bring back the real Cosimo after all. straight back from the realm of the dead, but you didn't dare. Hush!
Finolio shook his head with annoyance. Why did these troublesome thoughts keep returning? Everything would be all right once Cosmo sat on the Adderhead's throne. Then he'd have memories of his own, and he'd gather more of them every day, and soon the emptiness would be forgotten. His horse was saddled at last. The groom helped him to mount, his mouth twisted in a mocking smile. The fool Finolio knew he didn't cut a very good figure on a horse. He'd never get used to riding, but so what? These horses were alarming beasts, much too strong for his liking. But a poet living at his prince's court didn't travel on foot like a peasant, and he would go much faster on horseback, assuming the animal wanted to go the same way as he did. What a business it was to get the creature moving. The hooves clattered over the paved courtyard, past the barrels of pitch and iron spikes that Cosmo was having set on the walls. The castle still resounded at night to the hammering of the smiths, and Cosimo's soldiers slept in the wooden huts along the wall, crammed close together like larvae in an ant's nest. He had certainly brought a warrior angel into being, but hadn't angels always been warlike?
The fact is, I'm just no good at making up peaceful characters, thought Finolio as he trotted across the yard. The good ones either have bad luck like Dustfinger, or they fall among thieves like the Black Prince.
Could he ever have made up a character like Mortimer? Probably not. As Finolio was riding toward the outer gate, it swung open, so that for a moment he actually assumed the guards were finally showing a little respect for their prince's poet. But when he saw how low they bent their heads, he realized that it couldn't possibly be for him. Cosmo came riding toward him through the wide gateway, on a horse so white that it looked a little unreal. In the dark, he looked almost more beautiful than by day. But wasn't that the case with all angels? Only 7 soldiers followed him. He never took more as guards on his nocturnal rides. But someone else rode at his side, too. Brianna, Dustfinger's daughter, no longer wearing a dress that had belonged to her mistress, poor Violante, as so often in the past, but in one of the gowns that Cosimo had given her. He heaped presents upon her, while he no longer allowed his wife even to leave the castle, or their son, either. But in spite of all these proofs of love, Brianna didn't look particularly happy. And why should she? What girl would be cheerful if her lover was planning to go to war? The prospect didn't seem to cloud Cosimo's mood. Far from it. He looked as light at heart as if the future could bring nothing but good. He went riding every night. He seemed to need very little sleep, and Finolio had heard he rode at such a breakneck pace that hardly any of his bodyguards could keep up, like a man who had been told that death had no power over him. What difference did it make anyway, when he could remember neither his death nor his life? Day and night, Bulbulus was painting the most wonderful pictures to illustrate stories about that lost life. More than 12 scribes supplied him with the handwritten pages.
"My husband still won't enter the library,"
Violante had commented bitterly the last time Finolio saw her.
"But he fills all the reading desks with books about himself."
Unfortunately, it was only too clear that the words from which Finolio and Maggie had made him did not satisfy Cosimo. There were simply not enough of them. Everything he heard about himself seemed to have to do with another man. Perhaps that was why he loved Dustfinger's daughter so much, because she had nothing to do with the man he seemed to have been before his death. Finolio had to keep writing new and ardent love songs to Brianna for him. He generally stole them from other poets. He had always had a good memory for verse, and Maggie wasn't here now to catch him in the act of theft. Tears always came to Brianna's eyes when one of the minstrels, who were now welcomed to the castle again, sang her one of those songs.
Finolio!
Cosimo reined in his horse, and Finolio bent his head in the most natural way in the world, as he did only for the young prince.
Where are you going, poet? Everything's ready for us to march out!
He sounded as impatient as his horse, which was prancing back and forth, and threatening to infect Finolio's horse with its restlessness.
Or would you rather stay here and sharpen your pens for all the songs you'll have to write about my victory?
March out? Ready? Finolio looked around in confusion, but Cosimo laughed.
Do you think I'd assembled the troops here in the castle? They're far too many for that. No!
They're encamped down by the river. I'm only waiting for one more company of mercenaries recruited for me in the north. They may arrive tomorrow.
As soon as that? Finolio cast Brianna a quick glance. So that's why